You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Tom Silverstein has answers. Packers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If I ask you a week ago what you thought was going to happen, how different would that be with the scenario we have this week, Tom?
A week ago, I would have predicted what happened. A month ago, I would not have predicted that. When I started to see reports that this wasn't about money, you know, this was about principle and things like that, that's when I knew he was going to report, because it was sort of the process of him saving face, getting back, you know, deciding that, okay, it's time to play football and time to end this whole thing. So that's kind of the feeling I got a week ago.
What's going to happen today?
So he'll come in, all right, apparently he is in. I didn't track his plane. I am kind of behind them.
You're slipping. If this was Favre,
I know.
Favre would have.
I did have all my bellmen at the airport on watch, though. And so he'll report with the rest of the veterans. They do some conditioning. I think what will really happen is he'll go right to the front office and sit down, and they'll talk about exactly what's going to happen with his contract, with his demands, you know, what they're going to actually do for him. And then I assume he's going to report, and they'll practice tomorrow morning.
Okay. I got a couple of questions here that, and help me understand the language. Are they going to sign an addendum here? And then how does it work that Aaron Rodgers, if he doesn't want to stay, then he's still going to be traded, but he can tell the Packers where he wants to be traded?
Yeah. So we're all dealing on the basis of the reports, which we know are coming from his agent.
Yeah.
And so there's a couple of things I'm still really skeptical about. One is that there's no new money in the deal. If that's true, then I wonder why he went through all of this in the first place. Because, I mean, let's be honest about professional sports and players versus teams. It's about money. And money can, it may not, he may not need the money, but it's a pride factor. And so I'm guessing what they're doing is they're removing the final year of the contract, which effectively makes it necessary for the Packers to trade him next offseason. If he wants to be traded, it'll be no problem, because they're not going to let him get to that year of free agency, because if he leaves in free agency, they get nothing for him, basically a comp pick. So they're going to want to trade him next offseason. Jordan Love will have had 2 years in the system. The best case scenario is they win a Super Bowl this year. Rodgers moves on and tries to win a Super Bowl next year. Now, there is supposedly language that he can deny trades. You know, he can pick the team that he wants to go to. So there will have to be some kind of sign and trade. But to me, all of it, and I hate to say it, pains me to say it, but I think the Packers, it's not the narrative, but I think the Packers came out on top on this. I really do. I mean, you can't go against the NFL. A single guy cannot go against the NFL and win. They're a mega corporation, and they got rules in place that kill you as an employee. And I think he didn't get that much.
If I could take the Packers back to February and you could trade Rodgers, or go back to draft night when they took Jordan Love,
right,
which do-over would the Packers take?
I think if they knew he wasn't going to play, I mean, now I guess this is probably me, the fantasy general manager talking, but I would have traded him in February. But it's regardless, trading him now, they could do it. But as it's been pointed out to me numerous times, if they trade him next spring, they know what kind of picks they're getting.
Yeah.
You know, they know if they're trading them, if it's Denver and Denver's coming off a 6-10 season, that's a great thing for them, right? If they trade them now and they trade them to Denver and Denver goes 12-4, then those picks are not worth all that much. So at least they would know what they're getting and they could set the compensation that way.
And I wondered if you knew that you were probably headed towards some kind of divorce, you could have traded him like the night of the draft. I know Adam Schefter made it sound like it was imminent. You could have traded him to San Francisco, had the 3 pick overall and whatever else in there, or the Rams. Yeah. You could go back and the Rams probably would have signed up for Aaron Rodgers before Matthew Stafford. I think there were so many options out there, Tom. That's why even now, if Aaron Rodgers goes, hey, I want to go to Denver. Well, what's Denver give up that's true compensation for Aaron Rodgers? But hey, you've promised him that you're going to trade. I mean, it's just the gray area here is, you know, dark shade of gray.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned it. What if he gets hurt this year and then, you know, he plays 6 games and he's coming off of some kind of an injury? Then what are you going to get for him? And who's going to want to trade for him at 39 years old or 38 years old and injured? Now, that's a risk every player goes through. But to me, the Packers felt that this was somewhat of a bluff, and they were right. You know, in the end, they were right. It was a bluff. He's back. They're going to make – this has been a 3-year process to get to the Super Bowl. You know, they've been to 2 NFC championships. They built the team. They filled a bunch of holes this year. And now, you know, they have their quarterback in place. And whatever happens after this year, they're in salary cap hell anyway. So that's kind of an all or nothing year for them. So they needed Rodgers. They really did need Rodgers.
Okay, so if you're Devontae Adams, Rodgers is back. He's probably saying, hey, if I'm coming back, I want Devontae Adams signed up long-term. If you're Devontae Adams, do you sign up for a long-term contract? Or do you say, I want the same deal as Aaron Rodgers?
If I'm Devontae Adams and they throw down $40 million guarantee or $40 million signing bonus or whatever, you're going to take it. Yeah. You take what you know, with the organization that you like, where you felt you've been treated okay. I think the whole Devontae Adams thing was a negotiating ploy, and it's been used for years and years. And I remember when Brett Favre was going through this, Ryan Grant was a running back with the Packers whose contract was up or wanted a renegotiation, and he used it perfectly, you know, and got a great deal out of it. He didn't want to leave. I mean, I don't think Devontae Adams wants to leave.
Okay.
But why not use whatever you can to leverage, you know, as leverage so you can get a lot of money? I think they'll get a deal done with Adams. I don't think that's going to be a problem. And I think ultimately he'll either enjoy playing with Jordan Love or somebody else. If Jordan Love doesn't pan out, then they'll go after somebody else.
Do you know if they have a true assessment of Jordan Love right now, Tom?
I don't think so. I think they have all of the athletic assessment, but they have no idea how he's going to react during actual play. This is kind of going to be the summer of Jordan Love, I think. Rodgers will get a lot of the practice snaps, but
we'll call it the summer of love is what we need to call it, Tom.
Yeah, summer of love. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just saw that movie. That's really good too. I think he will play almost all the snaps. You know, Blake Bortles will get a handful of snaps, but this is the summer for Jordan Love to get as many snaps as possible and for them to really get him to advance.
You get one question for Rodgers. What do you ask him?
What did you get out of it? I think that's really it. What did you get out of 5 months of, drama? Was it worth it? Did causing angst amongst Packers fans and the organization and all of that, was that revenge for you? Did you feel that even the scales for whatever grievances you have against the Packers? I guess that would be my question.
And I felt like it was a little bit of a PR move with his agent or agents by telling Schefter, hey, we told you this wasn't about money, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, I tweeted that, like, it just seems like all of a sudden now negotiations are on with Davante Adams. I sort of felt like they were going to say, okay, the negotiations are on with Davante Adams. He didn't get any new money, and the wildfires out west have gone out, you know, all because Aaron Rodgers is coming back. You know, I expected that to be in there, too.
This just in from Tom Pelissero. Aaron Rodgers has arrived at Lambeau Field. Just want to let you know, Tom.
I got to go.
Yeah, I'll let you go. Tom, thank you as always. I appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure. Anytime.
Tom Silverstein, the Packers beat reporter, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Matt Damon has just joined us. I'm just looking at your bio, Matt. How many sports movies have you been in?
I don't know. Off the top of my head, there was the rugby one. There was Invictus. I don't know, man. I don't know. Wait, you're looking at my bio. You'll probably have a better idea. I'm not sure how many movies I've done. I've probably done more than 50. So,
all right. I got you as an extra in Field of Dreams.
That's true. Yeah, Ben and I were extras in that. Actually, just to go to Fenway, we were extras in Field of Dreams. Like, there were probably 3,000 extras in a big crowd scene when Kevin Costner and James Earl Jones are at the baseball game.
But how old are you? Do you get to talk to Costner?
You know what? We did. Costner came out and hung out with the extras. Ben and I went and struck up a conversation with him. And he probably gave us 5 minutes. Like, he was incredibly generous with
his
time.
Did you pitch a movie? Did you do your elevator pitch?
No. We just told him, we knew we wanted to be actors. I was probably 17 and Ben was probably 15. We were already traveling to New York and auditioning. And, we were like, we have agents. he was really, he was great. He was, it's like these two kids who were like, and it happens to me all the time. People come up, kids come up and they're like, I want to be an actor. And it's like, fantastic. Good for you, man. You're like, go get them.
School ties, you were a running back, you had fumble issues.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it's prep school football in 1955. We were running out of a wing tee, so I don't think it was like a very serious sports movie, but we did go and practice like a month early. Like, they wanted to make sure that that we knew what we were doing.
And then you lost your girlfriend to Brendan Fraser.
Listen, it can happen. It's an occupational hazard. Brendan's a great guy.
Yeah. You're not the first guy to lose a girl to Brendan Fraser.
I doubt I am the first guy to lose a girl to Brendan.
Is Rounders a sports movie?
That's a good question. I mean, you probably have to ask professional poker players. I mean, I think they would tell you it's a sport. I would say, just the architecture of the script. Yes, it's a sports movie. Like, it's exactly how you would design it if we were wrestling or playing basketball. So in that sense, it's a sports movie.
Who's more complicated or maybe interesting, John Malkovich or Ed Norton?
Listen, those are two of our best actors, two of the best that our country has produced. So, I wouldn't say either is less complicated than the other. They're both great guys and they're both a lot of fun to work with. They're both very serious, but they both work out of a place of total joy and they want it to be fun. So I couldn't really draw a distinction between them.
Let me give you the official introduction here. He's Matt Damon, actor, producer, screenwriter, and Tom Brady apologist, it says here.
I don't apologize for anything. Listen, I love that guy. I make no apologies.
Okay. If the Bucks played the Patriots in the Super Bowl, who would you root for?
Tom Brady.
Okay. All right. The movie is called Stillwater, opens in theaters this Friday. And so you're a guy from Oklahoma, Stillwater. You travel to France. Your daughter is there in prison. Now, let me see if I can do the connect the dots. Abigail Breslin is your daughter.
Yeah.
Abigail Breslin played in Little Miss Sunshine. She was the star. Greg Kinnear played in Little Miss Sunshine as her dad.
Yes.
You guys played Stuck on You, the Farley Brothers, and then you met your wife when you were doing that movie. How did I do?
You got everything right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's it. That's all, nothing else to talk about there, Matt. How do you nail an accent? How do you know when, okay, I got that Oklahoma accent?
Well, it's tough. I mean, you gotta spend a lot of time with it. I actually worked a lot in Texas when I was, in my 20s, just a lot of the movies I got were down there. So I lived down in that part of the world quite a bit and love it down there. And so I remember the rhythm and the cadence and how people talk, but you know, this was a very specific place and a very specific type of guy. He's a roughneck. And so I just went down to Oklahoma and hung out with those guys. And that's usually the best way to do it. And I also have a dialect coach, Tim Monick, who we can analyze and sit there and write down on paper exactly what's happening. But the best way to do it usually is to listen. Tim will have on file a lot of different voices and a lot of different, and we'll just listen and just start to get into the, you know, you kind of by osmosis, you eventually pick it up, but you do some technical work so you understand what's happening, but there's no substitute for just going there and hanging out.
But when you go to hang out, how long does it take for the locals to allow you to kind of absorb whatever you're absorbing?
Yeah, that's a good question. Cause you know, I mean, we got down there and those guys were understandably wary of us. You know, they're like, what are you like, Hollywood, like liberal, what are you doing down here? Like making a movie about a roughneck, like what are your intentions? You know what I mean? Like, you know, and I think it, you know, once they realized like we were just trying to get it right. And this is a movie that has a lot of empathy and compassion for this character that I play. You know, it's a movie about this journey this guy goes on. So once they realized that we weren't there to poke fun at him or anything, that we were there to really, you know, to get it accurately. They were incredible and really brought us in. I mean, you know, it's one of the great things about my job. I get to like parachute into somebody else's life. Who's like, you know, I mean, that roughneck culture in Oklahoma is so different from, you know, Cambridge, Massachusetts, where I grew up. You know, I mean, really, it's like a different world. And I can't get it right unless those guys let me come in and see what their life is like and talk to them about it and gather information. And they just could not have been more helpful.
Do you sprinkle in McConaughey type accent like accidentally?
His accent's a little softer than the one in this movie, you know, and I mean, Matthew's, you know, Matthew can play it up or down. Matthew actually can do a perfect impression of me. Cause I was, you know, when we did Interstellar together, you know, he was like, all right, you do this impression of me. And I was like, yeah, I just found out that like my voice could sound like yours if I just dropped down a little bit and went south. And I'm like, if you come up and go north, you'll get me perfectly. And he started doing it. We were in a van in Iceland and I was crying. I was like, because he's like, he's perfect. But he was like, I need a catchphrase. I need a catchphrase for you. Cause I would do like, you know, hey, I'm going to take my shirt off, you know, and like, he's like, you have a catchphrase. I need a catchphrase. So we got to come up with a catchphrase for Matthew. And then you can hear.
Could he fool your wife?
We have a similar vocal quality in a certain, like if we aim at it, like we could, I'm sure he could over the phone, fool her. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Bagger Vance. I forgot to mention that. Another sports movie.
Okay. Well, you had to bring it up.
Wait, you're not all in on Bagger Vance?
No. Well, listen, I love the experience. I love, you know, Robert Redford and Will and Charlize and like, you know, that the experience was great. And I learned how to play golf, but I'd never picked up a golf club before that movie. I grew up in a city and I picked up. And I look at that movie and cringe when I look at my golf swing. But to be fair, I look at my golf swing and cringe today. So
we had an idea for Funny or Die. Let's say you go to some place in Europe and you just start running and jumping into a car and you have some guy who's chasing you. People will think that there's another Bourne movie being shot. Like, you just do it out of nowhere. You just start running down the street.
Yeah. And just jump into like a smart car.
Yes.
Where somebody,
yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You got to get me out of here right now. We got to move. We got to move. Right. Yeah. 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 It might work. I also might get like hit in the head with a hammer.
You could. But, could. You could. But it'd be Funny or Die. That'd be the die part of it.
It would. It's the first skit that for Funny or Die where someone might die.
How old is too old to be Jason Bourne?
Listen, if there's a good story, it's, you know, you're never too old to be that guy, you know. And I, you know, look, eventually, I mean, I would love to do another one and at some point I'm going to have to pass it on. You know, I would love to figure out a way to hand it off to somebody, you know, a man or a woman. I mean, you know, like, you know, to, you know, as if that name is, you know,
Bond,
a name
Bond
that we
like.
Use and it can be anybody. Right. Like, but we got to come up. It's got to be good. I just, you know, I love those movies. I, you know, we all, there are a lot of really great friends of mine who put a lot into those and we don't want to mess it up. So if we do, it's got to be good.
What was the stunt you did in any of the Bourne movies where you look back and go, what the hell was I thinking?
I think on the first one, when I climb out down the embassy in Prague, I remember shooting that and I was in a harness on the side of this building and it was a particularly cold day in the winter in Prague. So let's say it was like minus 10 and I was so cold and I'm hanging on this thing and I'm a couple hundred feet up in the air and trying to grip this wall. And I just remember, and I was about 29, 30 years old and I was like, what am I doing? This is crazy. But the sequence is great. It was worth it.
And Matt wants everybody to know that this new movie, Stillwater, has gotten great reviews. Standing ovation at Cannes, right? Cannes.
Yeah.
Cannes.
Yeah. Cannes, Cannes. Yeah. 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 It was great. And it was also the first time I'd been in a movie theater in, you know, almost 2 years. And so I got oddly emotional. I was like, I got choked up and I get kind of snuck up on me. But it felt great to be in a movie theater again. You know, I mean, I'm like everyone else. I'm so sick of this COVID thing. I, you know, it's like, I can't get back to normal life fast enough, but you know, I know we're Delta variant and all that stuff and we're dealing with it, but I mean, I miss hanging out with people.
But also, and you want people to know this isn't like Liam Neeson in Taken, because people,
right.
I think, right? Because it feels like, somebody's going over to someplace in Europe to get his daughter back.
Thank you for bringing that up, man, because particularly for like people who listen to this show, which I do, you know, the movie might look like one of those movies because the setup is like that, right? You know, his daughter's in jail. He it's like one of those things. And it's you're expecting that kind of Liam Neeson hero or Jason Bourne for that matter to come in and, you know, kick some ass and have the skill set to kind of solve all the problems. This is decidedly not that movie. This is a movie about a real dude, a real, like a roughneck who's in that situation, who comes over and his daughter's 5 years into this sentence for a crime that she didn't commit. And he's been an absentee dad. And so he's messed up this relationship and he's trying to repair the damage that he's done with his, you know, by his failures. And he's doesn't have the skill set and he doesn't have, you know, and he's just doing his level best to help his daughter. And so it's much more of a drama than a thriller. So just anybody listening to it, if you go there expecting like any kung fu, you're going to be sorely disappointed. It's a movie about real people.
Where are you right now? Who came up with the background there in that room?
I'm in Brooklyn, New York. I'm at the one hotel where they're doing this press junket. And look at these. There's jars of, I don't know what those are.
What is that?
I don't know. It's what hipsters do. I'm in Brooklyn, man.
Yeah, but you live in Brooklyn, don't you?
I do. I live down the street, but I didn't want to do this in my house. It's church and state, man. I gotta keep these things separate.
5 years ago today was the last time we had you on.
Is it really that long?
5 years ago today.
God, how many times?
Where the hell have you? Did you get too big for us? Because if you did,
clearly not.
Okay. Now you're crawling back. I knew
crawling
it.
Crawling back, begging, begging.
I knew it.
For a little DP in my life.
And I think that you called in and you called in 8 years ago from your home in Miami, and Paulie picked up and he said, "Oh, you're calling from Miami." And you go, "I thought my number was blocked." And we had caller idea, and you asked Paulie, my producer, "Hey, how do I get this blocked, this number?" Paulie's like, I don't know. Don't you have like agent? Don't you have people who help you with this stuff?"
That's really funny, because I still have the same number and it's blocked, and everybody complains. Like if I FaceTime someone, they're like, "I knew it was you because it was blocked." I don't know how it got blocked, and I didn't remember that. So maybe Paulie's the one who told me how to block it, and that was the genesis of all of it.
Paulie, you still have Matt's number, don't you?
I can't deny her.
No, say it to him, and then he'll see if it's true or not.
I don't want to turn a Jason Bourne on me.
Just call me. I've got my phone on me. Just call me.
You got about
it.
Just text Matt. Just text Matt and just say, is this your number? Hey, good luck with the movie. And you know, don't wait another 5 years.
I don't want to, man. Okay. Hey, listen, Ben and I have this movie, The Last Duel, coming out in October. I'll come back and talk to you in a couple months.
That would be great. Hey, it's great to talk to you again. And thank you, Matt.
Go Bucks.
Go Tom. That's Matt Damon. The movie is called Stillwater, opens in theaters July 30th.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Barry Sperluga, he is covering the Olympics. He was at the event covering for the Washington Post and kind enough to join us on short notice. What was it like when you saw her walk off, Barry?
I mean, a little staggering. I mean, at first, of course, you think, well, she twisted an ankle or she's getting a knee treated and can't she go on? And what's her physical state? And then, you know, word kind of spreads around that it was, in fact, an injury, that she's making a decision based on mental health. And I got to say, Dan, like, you know, this is something that's come up in the lead up to these Olympics. It's come up at these Olympics. Simone Manuel, a swimmer, talked about it at trials. She was a gold medalist in 2016 and didn't even make the team here in that event. It is Naomi Osaka's story here. So if you put it in the context of these athletes, you know, they only are relevant to mainstream American sports fans once every 4 years. You add a fifth year onto that. Biles is trying to cement her place as the unquestioned, you know, all-time great in her sport. I think you're right. You heard it in her voice. There is a toll of all of that.
And do we have answers to everything yet? And like the individual events, like it just feels like there's a great mystery still to be solved here, Barry.
Oh, for sure. And she addressed that the all-around competition for individuals is on Thursday. And of course she won that in Rio. She's the huge, enormous favorite here. But she said tonight she's taking it day by day. They're going to have a morning off with no practice tomorrow. She sounds like a woman who needs a morning off with no practice tomorrow. She's going to clear her head. And you know, this opens up all sorts of stuff where, you know, what if she competes for the all-around gold as an individual on Thursday night? Did she give up on her team in essentially doing those same things on a Tuesday night? It'll be really fascinating to see, really interesting to hear what the reactions are from other athletes. But I think what we're looking at is a changing athlete, a changing viewpoint of what these people endure in, you know, being in the spotlight and then training and going through the grind of it out of the spotlight. They're being much more frank about how that affects them.
And you start to understand the enormity of this, that, yes, it's pushed an extra year. And NBC and Peacock have leaned on her and Katie Ledecky to really be, there's no Usain Bolt, there's no Michael Phelps, that they're leaning on these two athletes to carry the next 2 weeks. And I don't know what that pressure would be like, the enormity. I can only imagine that. And you're supposed to win gold. You know, covering the Olympics, the beauty is a 17-year-old from Alaska who wins a gold, and that's the great story of the Olympics. Simone Biles wins gold, or a few golds, be like, okay, we expected her to. And I think you could almost, you could hear that pressure. And boy, that says a lot about what she must be under right now.
And that's the dichotomy of it, right? Like the 17-year-old Lydia Jacoby from Alaska, like no one, if she had won bronze, we wouldn't be talking about her. She would be enormously satisfied. Her hometown would be thrilled. Yeah. But it's an extra layer because she came out of nowhere. She won that gold, and she didn't have to think about the stuff that Simone Biles thought about, not just this morning when she was getting up to compete, but when she was flying over here and a year ago when the games were postponed and when she was evaluating, does she want to continue and should she just retire? Those are real pressures. And people can say like, well, she gets the spoils too. She gets the endorsements and she's going to make millions of dollars. And that's all true. But I think we should be mature enough and developed enough to acknowledge that, you know, millions of dollars don't instantly make your head right. So it really was an amazing sight to see her walk off, come back and legitimately root on her teammates, but also say, on this day, given my mental state, I would have been a hindrance to the U.S. winning a medal, not a help.
Well, there's collateral damage. I mean, Michael Phelps talked about this.
Yeah.
Looked like he had everything. And then you realize that he understood that he was damaged in some way. And that's the greatest Olympian that we've ever seen, that enormity.
And he's the one, I think, who was ahead of the curve on this stuff. He dealt with it in the middle of his career and kind of pulled himself back to get to Rio and win more. So if somebody who has won 23 gold medals, more than anybody in history, is saying, you got to listen to these athletes and telling athletes, you have to tend to yourselves. I think that's really important. And I would say too, and this is why it's such a layered discussion. It's like, you have to acknowledge that being a champion athlete takes some measure of mental strength, and we can't just say all of a sudden, okay, the standards are completely different, you know, but there is, what is fighting through that and persevering, and what is tending to yourself so you don't break down? I think that's over the next 3 years to the next Summer Games, that's probably the discussion that needs to happen, not just around athletes, but with athletes.
Barry, thanks for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, Dan.